listening to the only daily talk show in North America covering the world of football. This is World Football Daily.
Yes, 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 yes! It hits the back of the net! Oh my goodness me!
The world's game.
Oh, you're beautiful! What a headshot! What a head!
Our religion.
Brilliant goal! What an equalizer!
Our passion.
Go, go, USA! Oh, it's incredible! You could not write a script like this!
World Football Daily serves up the best football talk 5 days a week.
Oh! You will never, ever see a game quite like this! Unbelievable!
Games in European football between these two sides, and finally there's a draw. Real Madrid get a 2-2 draw as Bale and Ronaldo strike in Turin to give the old lady a still difficult Champions League final two group games to deal with. They were helped though by a shock win in Copenhagen. FC Copenhagen beating Roberto Mancini and Didier Drogba's Galatasaray to shake things up in that group in the Champions League. A United draw, City win, and then a whole feast of football for us to come as well tonight. There's too much to talk about here on World Football Daily, and we just don't have enough time here on the show. Welcome to Wednesday's edition of WFD. I am Oliver the Juice Wilson, bringing you the news and the many views from around the world of football. Joining me a little later on, of course, will be Rafa Gonzalez. We also have, I know I didn't mention it just then in the intro, but we have, of course, the big games coming up tonight in Major League Soccer. The Dynamo take on the Red Bulls in New York. Hey, I'm a New Yorker. Sorry, I apologise to any Red Bull fans and to any people, anybody from New York in general, for that terrible accent. And of course, the New England Revolution taking on Sporting Kansas City. Carl McCarthy, I noticed on Twitter, good friend of the show, Goal.com's Carl McCarthy, was talking about how he's very wet in Kansas right about now and not enjoying the weather welcoming that he got. Could be a soggy evening tonight as SKC look to come back against the upstarts that are the New England Revolution. They take that 2-1 lead into their game tonight. 2-2 on the score sheet though between the Dynamo and the Red Bulls this evening. That could go any way, but I just think I know which way that one is going to go. We'll talk a little bit of Major League Soccer later on, and also later on this week, because I really want to get into those playoff games that will be taking place tonight and tomorrow. Big action everywhere. There is, of course, another night of Champions League football coming our way, and some of the biggest ties that you could imagine in Europe, including the clash of the Titans, so to speak, as Barcelona take on and host AC Milan in the Nou Camp. We have Zenit St. Petersburg against Porto, the early kickoff. Basel taking on Steaua Bucharest. Chelsea meet FC Schalke in a tasty tie of England against Germany, but that's taking place elsewhere as well. The game of the night, surely, Dortmund against Arsenal. Got a funny story coming up. Maybe not funny, but I think it's entertaining at least, coming up about that. Napoli take on Marseille. Atletico Madrid take on Austria Vienna. Mentioned Barca against AC Milan. And of course, Ajax, an iconic name in European football, take on Celtic. Also going to discuss the brand new boots that have been launched by Adidas today as well. Samba style. We'll be talking about that here on the show later on. But I'm delighted to say, on a mammoth show today, we have our first guest ready and waiting to join us on the line. He's a man who we're about as happy to see as Real Madrid were as happy to see Xabi Alonso back in the starting lineup last night. That's right, joining us here on World Football Daily, the creative mastermind, the playmaker, if you will, of all things Spanish football journalism. It is, of course, the one, the only, Mr. Graham Hunter, joining us here on WFD to talk to us all things La Liga and Champions League action. Graham, an absolute pleasure to have you on the board today. How are you, mate? It's a pleasure to have you back.
Morning, legend. Not even the slightest bit tired after a 6 a.m. Spain start after last night's Real Sociedad game against Manchester United, and looking forward to today's fascinating Barcelona-Milan game. The Champions League demands a lot, not just from the players and the administrators, but from the journals too, believe me.
Will you be heading off to UEFA and petitioning with other managers that you maybe there should be a bigger break between these fixtures? We should have less games in the season as well then, Graham?
If I didn't feel such sympathy for the players, which I genuinely do, I'd be petitioning for double the number of games. The Champions League is the Rolls Royce of football competitions. It's utterly spellbinding and brilliant. And if I could be at 4, 5, 6 of the Champions League games per week, then I would. I'd love to see them spread out over 3 days. It's honestly, it's, I'm not going to say it's addictive. It's one of the modern things that encapsulates the very reason that I fell in love with football as a 6, 7 year old, despite the framework and the ideals and the promotion, the coverage of football being utterly different in the 30s when I was young. But I think that you see such spectacle, such excitement, such talent, that and such pitting of wits by coaches against each other. It's been responsible, the Champions League, really, for, you know, a complete change in mentality about attacking football and about how winning away from home should be as easy, should be as routine as winning at home. You know, when you grew up in my era, where teams went for stultifying, you know, our hands around the throat defence, and you play 5 men at the back, not a free man, but 4 plus 1 behind and a goalkeeper. When you imagine all that and you look at what we're given now, to me the Champions League is a gift from on high. And I'd genuinely like to be at 40 or 50 of the games per year if I could. I'm a total aficionado.
Are you in favour then of maybe expanding the Champions League, as has been discussed on occasions by UEFA, or even this European Super League that's been proposed on a couple of occasions as well, Graham? Do you think it should be taken a step further?
I'm very, very, very hesitant about that. For as long as I've been a journalist, there have been stories about Super Leagues. I was at a paper dealing with them when we broke the entire story of a planned Super League where funds had been set aside and teams were meeting, and there was a direct challenge to UEFA in that it would have been a breakaway, a separate commercial league, not the European Clubs Association, which is now like a lobbyist and contains the biggest voices, the biggest clubs in European football, and chivvies UEFA along into line on revenues and in terms of rules, in terms of organization, but lobbying UEFA from within the tent. This one was outside the tent, urinating in, if you use the political expression. And I can't explain to you why I grew up equally fascinated by European continental football, European football, as I did with domestic football. But it has always been that way. The European Cup, the Cup Winners' Cup, which Aberdeen won when I was 20 or whatever, equally, and the UEFA Cup, they mean something to me. There are other people like me. I remember, if your listeners remember, Alec McLeish, who won the European Companies Cup with Aberdeen as a centre-back next to Willie Miller, and latterly, you know, played 80-something times for Scotland and latterly coached at Rangers and at Birmingham and Aston Villa and Scotland. I know that, you know, in an Aberdeen era when there was no internet, when there was no Sky Television, when you couldn't get magazines on European football regularly, he'd come in as a 17, 18-year-old to Pittodrie in the late 70s, early 80s, talking like, did you see what Bordeaux did at the weekend? Did you see what Valencia did at the weekend? Or isn't it interesting how Dupla Praga are playing? And the players around him, these season pros who would go on to beat Bayern Munich and beat Real Madrid, looked at him with dismay as if to say, what the hell are you on? And he's like me. There are other people who are just like, it's in your blood. And therefore, when you get... I was sceptical earlier about the dismantling of the old Champions Cup, the European Cup, knockout, champions only. I was. And I was wrong. And I think that the Champions League now is a brilliant competition. I'm very hostile in my columns to people, particularly in England, media commentators in England, who say, well, it's a bit boring, it's always the same teams, and they open their mouth without engaging the brain, because, you know, we have seen Manchester City failing to qualify from the group stage, Manchester United failing to qualify from the group stage, Jose Mourinho being dismissed at Chelsea after a surprise European home defeat against a Scandinavian side, we see shocks like Bayern Munich dismantling Barcelona 7-0. We see glorious, and I mean glorious, football like the 2011 Barcelona Wembley final against Manchester United. We see extraordinary, unscriptable nonsense like 1999, where the people who are going to hand the cups over have got all the blue and red, or red, you know, black and blue Bayern Munich ribbons tied on the cup and walked down the Camp Nou stairs. And by the time they amble out onto the pitch, United have won it. You see the most extraordinary human drama, brilliant skill. I go back to what I said about men pitting their wits against each other in terms of planning, in terms of reaction during the game, in terms of how to handle the press conference pre and post. Why change it? I'm sceptical, unless it's clubs saying, we just want a bigger cake and a bigger share of that bigger cake. Now, economics are vital to keep the game alive, but at the moment, I'd rather see better resource husbandry by clubs than say, let's make let's be more gluttonous about how we give the public European football. At the moment, I'd need, if I were in charge, I'd need extraordinarily strong persuasion that there's very much wrong with this Champions League format right now.
Well, Graham, I'm sure there's many of our listeners that would be happy to put you in charge with your thoughts and expertise on the game.
There'd be probably just as many who'd be happy to put me right.
I tell you what, we'll see if they can email in, and then we'll send
it.
We'll send
it. I want to know
how would if you put Graham Hunter in charge, how would you allow him to change football? We'll see what we get back from that. In the meantime, talking of great moments in Champions League football and great games, did Juventus Real Madrid for you meet that high standard? It was, to me watching it, an absolutely engrossing game of football.
No, I agree with your second part there. It did. It sucked you in. You couldn't help but feel all the past dramas, not just between the two clubs. The last time I was at that particular tie in Turin, he was at the Stadio delle Alpi, and Juventus were putting out, Zlatan Juventus were putting out Michael Owen's Real Madrid. We saw a red card, I believe it was Ronaldo for Real Madrid. I was also at the Amsterdam final in 98 when pre-match Jupankas, the Madrid coach, was asked, if you win the European Cup, if you win the fabled Septima, the seventh European Cup, do you think that will be enough to keep your job? No, he said it won't. He did win it, and it didn't keep his job. And I thought that last night's drama had, and you could hear those grace notes from the past calling to you. You could see the tension of the Ancelotti-Conte clash, the two Italian coaches. While Ancelotti had been Juve coach, he was unsuccessful. He's not particularly liked in Turin because he's so much of a Rome and Milan legend. The one thing I would say is that I think objectively most people would agree that what takes away from the match as an A++++ is that Real Madrid didn't play well in the first half. They competed, but they looked lost. There was a dopey tackle from Varane to give away the penalty. The penalty was converted beautifully, after which I thought the second half had a great deal. Okay, Juve drifted away. Juve fans will be saying to me, maybe we played as badly in the second half as Roma did in the first, but I thought Roma did look cogent. They looked as if they're beginning to click. They certainly showed desire up front. The Benzema coming to life again is almost as interesting as the Bale-Ronaldo partnership. Three goals, 4 assists for Gareth Bale. What the hell more do you want? Ronaldo running away with the Champions League top scorer prize this season, pre-camp now at the moment, when the Ballon d'Or votes are being cast. For me, you're right. It was engrossing. It was thrilling. I'm a personal fan of Fernando Llorente, partly because of his skills and his hard work, but knowing him, I like him a lot. He's one of the football world's articulate, intelligent, admirable guys, and life's been tough for him for a couple of years to get 2 goals and 2 ties against Madrid, one of which finally counted for a point, will do him the world of good towards his Juventus career, but towards the World Cup with Spain next summer. So to me, you're right. If it wasn't 5-star, it was 4¾-star. Hugely enjoyable to watch, and passionate, passionate crowd played in a, what's been a very successful new stadium project for Juve. I love the Comunale. I went and worked in the Comunale with the former Celtic manager, Tommy Burns, when we were invited over there by Juventus to go and watch Gianpietro Ventroni, the fitness trainer, who worked under Lippi. And Lippi sat us down in the cafe, Tommy Burns and I, and showed us on a small football board with little pins his formation that he was going to use to play Real Madrid in the spring in that Champions League. They beat Real Madrid over two ties. They went on to win that season. Lippi sat down over a cafe table and explained to Tommy Burns, each man for Madrid and Juve, what his concept of how the game would play was, how he was going to prepare. The Comunale, to me, was everything that the Delle Alpi wasn't. And now the Juventus Stadium seems to me to have brought back some of the passion of Turin. And Juventus are a club that excites me at the moment. Vidal excites me. Pogba excites me. It's extraordinary to see Buffon and Pirlo still excellent at these ages. Conte, I always admired as a footballer for his work and his increasing intelligence as he got older. And as a coach, he's been exemplary. So to me, you put your finger on it. It was two great, great, great European clubs thrashing out and unable to separate themselves, not for the want of quality or effort.
Graham, you mentioned Varane and his slightly clumsy challenge that led to the penalty. And it really, to me, that's one of the few times we've seen this young centre-back who just shot onto the scene last year in the Champions League especially, where he suddenly looked a little bit out of his depth yesterday evening and he didn't look completely comfortable. And similarly, what did you make of Varane playing alongside Pepe then as that centre-back role and Ramos being put out on the right-back position for Madrid?
What I made of it is that, not for the first time, it's hats off to Ancelotti. He's having a rough ride here, Ollie, and I think a lot of it's unjustified. I'm not saying, you know, break out the hankies, because when he signed on, he knew what Real Madrid was like. But I thought his work in the Clásico was far better than he was given credit for. He'd made experiments, and he was hammered in Spain, because they always know better. What a stupid experiment that was. What an idiotic idea that was. Okay, it didn't work. But experimentation in sport, or anything, any art, creative art, can lead you to discard certain ideas and get still firmer about certain ideas, even if you've lost. One of the great things about youth football, the UEFA Champions League and the next generation over the last couple of years, has been clubs who said, well, I want to try and I want to experiment. I want to get this young guy, this 16-year-old, to play, even if he's playing his 19-year-olds, because losing in this league doesn't matter, but developing does. Well, the concept's the same. And in the Clásico, he experimented with ideas that didn't come off. Ramos in midfield, Ronaldo in the wide, and Bale down the middle to begin with. Things didn't play, and it was only when he changed that Real Madrid got better. But he brought on Jesse, and Jesse got a goal. He learned a little bit about Bale, and he learned a little bit about Ramos, and he rested Ramos. And it took no risk to put Ramos back to right back. But fullbacks have been a problem for Real Madrid over the last 3-4 games. Marcelo's level has dropped. Carvajal has shown his inexperience for the first time. Arbeloa's looked lacking in pace, and the fans are getting on his back. And Ancelotti chose an intelligent solution. I have to admit, most people didn't see coming, which is Varane and Pepe at centre-back. Don't leave one of the centre-backs out. Put Ramos back to his old position. Second half particularly, Ollie, I thought Ramos was excellent. To me, Ancelotti needs to be given far less knifing in the media and to have far fewer agendas played out, presidential agendas, anti-presidential agendas played out against him. And as such, I salute him for his bravery and his intelligence, and he's trying to develop a system which accommodates the must-play players. And that's not easy. And it was brutally difficult without Alonso, because at the moment, the most accommodating system to get the talents all together is 4-3-3. Eventually, I think it'll go back to 4-2-3-1. But the 4-3-3 without Alonso was difficult. 4-2-3-1 without Alonso was next to impossible. And while a big club can't depend on one man, Alonso's influence there has been allowed to grow, because even though Yarramendi is meant to be his successor in due course, Yarramendi is in play for Sociedad, where mistakes are accepted, they aren't life or death. He's still young, he lacks experience, he's not played a great deal for Spain, he hasn't played any Champions League football before this season. And neither Modric nor Khedira exactly mimics Xabi Alonso. So if Alonso now stays fit, his talent, his intelligence, his vision, his leadership, his organisation, his positional sense on the pitch, what his movement allows other players to do, that will begin to bring equilibrium, that much-prized asset for a football team. And if you bring equilibrium to a team that was already scoring goals for fun, and you add equilibrium to the defence in front of whichever four you want to play, best four, on form, in my view, Ollie, is Marcelo on the left, Varane and Ramos in the middle, and Carvajal on the right. They're not all in form at the moment. Once they are, and you pick either one of those exceptional goalkeepers, I'm still a Casillas man, Madrid become a threat. And therefore, while they don't look this instant like Champions League winners, to rule them out, even to rule them out in light of how mechanically, metronomically well Bayern Munich are playing, is inane. In due course, if the ship stays steady, Madrid are potential Champions League winners.
I have to agree with you there, Graham. They do make up that kind of three or four sides that you can see, despite Bayern Munich looking like they could potentially run away with it, still competing and possibly winning this year's Champions League. We have to look ahead to tonight's game as well very quickly. Two games, Atletico Madrid taking on Austria Vienna and then Barcelona taking on AC Milan tonight. You said when you joined us today, Graham, that you thought Barca-AC was a very intriguing tie, but surely in the Nou Camp, the last two games, Barca have scored seven against Milan the last time they've met here. Paper and form as well surely gives Barca a big upper hand in this one.
Yeah, both of them do. I'm not certain how relevant that is, because in the first game, in the 3-1 game, if I'm right, which certainly caused Milan's elimination 2 years ago, the game was much tighter. There was a slightly bizarre penalty decision at a corner. Milan were in that tie, no question about it. And the second time, Messi was electric. Barcelona were electric. They were losing 2-0. They needed the fourth goal to be sure, so that a away goal couldn't trouble them. It came late, very late. Looking at the paper, those two scores are healthy. But I also go back to the group game of a couple of seasons ago, which was 2-2. I go back to the fact that Milan outplayed Barcelona for half an hour a couple of weeks ago on a bad pitch, admittedly, at the San Siro. I also go to the fact that while I think we shouldn't be, you know, wailing and gnashing our teeth about Leo Messi's form at the moment, without him and without the incessant, mechanical, ice hockey fast passing of the Pep Guardiola era, Barcelona are currently just a very good team, not an exceptional team. And as such, if Milan have a good day and Barca have a bad day, there's not a 4 or 3 goal margin in this. If it goes the other way and Milan play as miserably as they have in some of their matches, particularly at the weekend in Serie A, and Barcelona have a very good day, then sure, there could be 3-4 goals in it. But right now, with the pitch, you know, Dani Alves saw fit to complain about the quality of the Camp Nou pitch. With a team where Neymar has had a very good season but hasn't yet scored in the Champions League, where I think either Iniesta or Xavi will sit on the bench, with Balotelli, Balotelli at full tilt, holds many of the things Barcelona don't like. Running hard at a slightly flat-footed back four, aerially very good, although Barcelona have diminished the number of goals and losing the headers, it's still probably their biggest weak point. As such, you go back to Milan are also a great Champions League club. You know, there's significantly more of these trophies than Barcelona, and there's a reason for that. They're in a pitiful state at the moment. They don't have as much talent, but they are aggressive, they do work hard. It'll be Pavlovian. The bell will ring and the dogs will come out looking for food. And I'd also point out that over the last 7 ties between these two sides in just over 2 years, it's been 21 goals. And Milan have had a share of those. Until Barcelona hit top gear, until Barcelona proved tonight that they're at their maximum intensity, irrespective of Milan looking cornered, looking as if they're in trouble, they are, I think they're a dangerous Rottweiler opponent. And if you subdue them and you're in charge, fine, there's a quality gap. Until that happens, it's a dangerous tie.
What have you made of Neymar's, just quickly, Graham, before we let you go, Neymar's performances in the Champions League this year? Because obviously so much pressure coming in, and a number of people talking about, you know, Alexis Sanchez is starting to raise his game this year. Fabregas is continuing to look strong, of course, in a Barca shirt. What about Neymar on this big stage? Because you mentioned he hasn't scored yet, and obviously that will be a slightly glaring fact going into tonight's encounter.
Well, I think he stood out at Celtic Park when the goal came. And remember that Victor Valdes needed an extraordinary save, and John McGrew missed a very, very scorable header. When the goal comes, you know, the ball's played to Neymar, and he takes it and he holds and he turns and he lays off to Alexis, and Alexis makes the back post cross for Cesc Fabregas to score. That was a key moment. It's emblematic of what he's done, Ollie, because, you know, when you score, what is it? I think he scored 131 goals for Santos in Brazil already at his age, which is extraordinary. What is he, 21? And when you play like he did in the Confederations Cup, which was pretty full of flair, when he had a dull game, he would produce 6 minutes of something exceptional. He brought to the Camp Nou this tendency to exaggerate fouls, to look for bookings for other players, which certain communities in football think is acceptable. It's fine. Okay, you probably don't, the majority of our audience doesn't. But these are the things he brought on top of his pure talent. And therefore, to answer your question, what he's shown in the Champions League, I think, is pretty similar to what he's shown domestically in La Liga, and it surprised me. He's shown real, real self-control, discipline. He's been very measured in how he uses his flamboyance. He's one of the things that fantastically talented footballers don't always manage to do is to understand how to harness it to not only to the team, but to what the coach has asked them to do. Now, Neymar has consistently done just that, subjugated the fun that he likes to have with the ball to what the rest of his teammates need. He supplied more assists than goals, but he's also done what Martinez asked him to do in the Champions League as well as domestically, behave. Don't exaggerate fouls. Don't retaliate if you're kicked around. Don't overly complain to the referee. Make yourself a team player. Don't trample on Messi's toes. He has taken me aback. Not that means I take back what I wrote for ESPN in the summer, that I think that Neymar's purchase wasn't the most important purchase for Barcelona. And I thought then, and I think still, it holds the capacity to threaten Leo Messi's degree of satisfaction at the Camp Nou. I think these menaces both still exist. But his ability to adapt, his maturity, his team play, I think have been exceptional. And given that he reacted to what you call the big stage when the Clásico came along by scoring the opening goal and then making the assist for Alexis, it would be far from surprising if he dipped his toe in the water tonight against Milan. It's his stage. He's playing very well. It's his moment. His link with Alexis is very good. His link with Messi is very good. We live in Neymar times.
Graham, from a personal point of view, I really hope that he doesn't dip his toe in the goal-scoring waters of the Champions League against AC Milan tonight, but I'm sure for the neutrals and for the Barca fans everywhere, they will be hoping for exactly that. We so appreciate you taking the time out to join us today here on World Football Daily, Graham. We'll let you get down to your real business, and we look forward to catching up with you again very soon indeed, mate. Thank you so much.
Enjoy your soccer on World Football Daily.
Thank you very much indeed. We shall, and we shall enjoy the games tonight. Graham Hunter joining us here on World Football Daily, talking all things Spanish football. And of course, Madrid with that 2-2 draw last night. The first draw between Madrid and Juventus in European competition between these two sides. 15 encounters before they had a draw until last night, number 16. And of course, Real Sociedad drawing with Manchester United. Didn't have a chance to cover that too much with Graham. We'll try and cover it a little later on. And didn't have a chance to talk Atletico Madrid either. They take on Austria Vienna tonight, but Barca taking on AC Milan. A tasty tie indeed, giving us a bit of hope. But I still think, you know, you're talking about... He does say that this is a Milan side that, yes, the dogs will come out and eat, but at the same time, you know, this is a Barca side that is playing still not world world's best football, but very, very, very good football indeed. And Milan, as you said, woeful on the weekend. I wonder if that will have an impression or if they can raise their game for the fixture against Barca tonight. We do have another fantastic guest ready and waiting to join us here on the line on World Football Daily. As if covering Spanish wasn't enough today, we are going to head a little east of Spain and drop in across into France and, of course, have a chat about all things Paris Saint-Germain and Marseille's big encounter tonight against Napoli. Joining me now on the line is the man to do all of that and always a man who we look forward to chatting with. It's Goal.com's very own Mr. Robin Berner here on World Football Daily. Robin, it's a pleasure to have you back, mate. How are you today? Hope you're very well indeed, man.
Yeah, I'm really good, Ollie. Thanks very much.
Fantastic. I'm glad to hear you're in a high spirits. Maybe, though, dampened slightly by, I don't want to say a disappointing performance, but a disappointing result for PSG, possibly against Anderlecht last night?
I don't think it would be going too far to say that it was a disappointing performance, particularly off the back of so many good showings from Laurent Blanc's team. To draw 1-1 at home with Anderlecht, particularly after beating them so convincingly in Belgium, it would have to be considered to be a fairly big disappointment, even though their place in the next round is virtually secure. We're expecting more from PSG, and for them to produce such a flat showing was certainly a little bit disappointing, yeah.
Was it a flat showing? Was it a case that maybe Anderlecht just caught them off guard? Because they really took the game to PSG last night.
Yeah, I think there's certainly an aspect. That's certainly an aspect of what went wrong for Paris Saint-Germain last night. Anderlecht were a whole lot better than they had been in the first leg. They were so much more combative, so much more in your face. They looked more organised, more experienced. They brought back some experienced players, and that certainly had a big improvement on their performance. But yeah, certainly the Belgians certainly stepped their game up, and Paris Saint-Germain failed to respond.
Where were the weaknesses that Anderlecht exploited last night for PSG? What do you think was the weakest part of that performance yesterday?
I think certainly the biggest disappointment in Paris Saint-Germain's performance was that Zlatan Ibrahimovic was perhaps a little bit disappointing, which is in complete contrast to his form recently, because he's obviously been so explosive, most notably against Anderlecht in the first game between the teams. I didn't think Paris were particularly effective going forward. They didn't move the ball quick enough, and when they did, when they got into good positions, they were quite wasteful. And certainly Lucas Moura, he was one of the players who disappointed me the most yesterday, because I really felt that it was a chance for him to really stamp his authority in the Paris Saint-Germain team, to really stake a claim for a first-team place again. But he was wasteful, and I was quite disappointed by him. And I think Anderlecht, just putting a little bit more pressure on Paris all over the field, certainly physically made a big difference to their performance.
Robin, in terms of Moura, since he's joined this PSG side, there was a lot of talk about him, although we did actually have some people on World Football Daily say that they thought maybe he wasn't ready or wasn't as good as some people expected. Has he been as good as you've hoped? And is he improving in this PSG side? Because, of course, you hear all the time about Ibrahimovic, Cavani now as well, hogging those headlines. Moura's not getting much praise kind of globally on the internet, on the press front. What do you make of him at the moment?
For me, he's been a player who's underperformed. I don't think there's any doubt about that. He's kind of flattered to deceive at times. He's shown that he's got great potential, but it's never really come out for him in games. He's maybe beaten two or three players and produced 5-10 seconds of absolute magic, but then followed it up with a poor decision or a poor finish. Basically, his game's not quite as polished as the likes of Ibrahimovic and Cavani, who have completely snatched the spotlight from him. As a result, he's fallen to the bench, and I think he's going to struggle to get back in the team as things stand at the moment, which is a shame, because he is certainly a player with immense potential, but for the money that Paris paid out for him last January, I don't think they've seen much return in terms of that yet. But that's not to say that he's a lost cause entirely, but it seems like he's a little bit low in confidence, and you know that needs to be built up before he's going to become a real star again.
I suppose PSG fans, though, when they look at the amount of money and the players that they've brought in, the number of players that have done well in this PSG side since coming in for large amounts of money, Moura, do you think he's one of the exceptions that almost proves the rule that PSG have been buying well?
Yeah, I think that's a pretty fair thing to say. I don't necessarily think all of Paris Saint-Germain signings have been immensely successful. I mean, you've got to look at Xabi Pastore as well, who is certainly at the moment really struggling to get into the team, even more so than Lucas. And even Cavani, even though he's their top scorer in the league, he's not been immensely effective for them in the position that he's been played, although you can't really blame him for that because it's not playing out on the right wing is not where he would ideally want to play, and he's kind of being shoehorned into the team at the moment, albeit he is to some extent being successful. But I think overall PSG's transfer policy has been very effective, and I don't think you could really have too many quibbles with it at the moment.
It's maybe a slight bit of worry. Last night from watching this game, Dizou's goal, wonderful piece of passing play from Anderlecht, but the ease in which they were able to splice open that defence. Do you think other defences from top Champions League potential winning sides would have been able to deal with that sort of passing, or was this just PSG getting beaten by a very good piece of Champions League football?
In my opinion, it was just a very good piece of football. I think generally Paris Saint-Germain's defence has fared up quite well this season. And that's despite playing maybe a slightly more adventurous system under Laurent Blanc. Certainly the way he's playing with the throwbacks further up the field and much wider, it does invite teams to be able to counter-attack into them, but you wouldn't expect a team to be able to pass through them quite so easily. But I think Anderlecht need to be given a lot of credit for that goal last night, because it was a very nice piece of football. And I don't think you'll see PSG cut open quite as easily very often this season.
Let's hope PSG fans especially that doesn't happen, and that, especially when you get Thiago Silva back into that back four, they look so strong at points. There's a big game, of course, tonight for French football. Marseille against Napoli. It's a lost cause, if you will, the Champions League at the moment for Marseille, though, isn't it, Robin?
Yeah, absolutely. They've yet to pick up a point in the competition so far this season, and to be honest, they've not really looked like they've been able to threaten any of the teams in their group who have just outclassed them in every single match so far, and I'd be surprised if the same didn't happen again tonight.
We saw kind of the protests from the fans where a year or so ago when Marseille were playing some pretty shoddy football at times. I mean, is there slightly less of an expectation around this side at the moment? And is this poor performance in the Champions League in a tough group being accepted in France?
I don't know if it accepted is the word. I think the French media and certainly the Marseille fans would have expected their team to produce a more sort of combative showing, a more maybe streetwise showing. They've certainly been very disappointing, and I think there's a certain degree of unhappiness and lots of pressure building on their coach, Elie Boop, at present, because their form has been so poor. And it's important to notice that it's not just in the Champions League they've been disappointing. Also in the league, after making quite a good start, they've been very poor in the last maybe 2 months, and they've started to slip down the table. And as a result, the pressure is really starting to build on everybody around the club, particularly since the football they've been playing has not been particularly pretty.
Now, Marseille, you mentioned the pressure kind of turning up on Elie Boop, and we heard in a couple of weeks back about there possibly being a crunching point coming soon for Boop and his managerial spell at Marseille. But in general, they're not a side that have, especially with Didier Deschamps most recently, who have rushed into managerial decisions. Do you see this being a smart move if they do get rid of Boop because of some poor performances in the Champions League and obviously not a phenomenal start to Ligue 1 this season?
Well, I have to admit, he's not a coach that I particularly enjoy because of his style of play. I find him very, very, very tough to watch because his teams are so negative. And the Marseille fans don't really like that. They like to see a sort of swashbuckling team, a team that will go out and attack games. And I think his style, it was always going to be quite difficult for him to marry into the sort of Marseille mentality. And I think initially he did quite well because of, he was winning games, basically. To get that Marseille team that he had last season into the Champions League was a fairly big achievement. This season, I think they're really struggling. It's coming off the back of some more selling in the summer. They've not really got the depth in the team, but I think the fans want to see a bit more passion, a bit more excitement in their players. And I don't think they'll really get that under Bope. I don't think, I mean, it really depends on who the Marseille board have got lined up to come in. But I don't think a change would do a great deal of harm to the team, to be honest.
What kind of a calibre manager, though, would they be able to bring in at Marseille? Because when Ligue 1 is starting to evolve and develop into this PSG Monaco kind of dynasty at the moment, it must be difficult for Marseille to think about attracting a top manager to come down to the south of France and change things.
Yeah, absolutely. Marseille's big trouble at the moment is all financial. That's why they're struggling on the field. That's why their squad doesn't have great depth, and that's part of the reason why Bope's struggling to get a competitive team together for the Champions League. Who they could get, it's difficult to say. They're probably looking for somebody in France, which, you know, probably restricts their options in terms of a top manager. You know, they're not going to get anybody of the calibre of Claudio Ranieri or even Laurent Blanc. They're really looking at sort of maybe a second-rate manager would be a little bit harsh, but, you know, certainly not a premier coach to come in and help their team.
It's going to be a difficult period ahead for Marseille. It's going to be even more difficult tonight away against Napoli. And it's a Napoli side that's going to be really going for a victory tonight, obviously, with everybody else on 6 points in that group. Do you give Marseille a chance at all of forcing Napoli to stumble slightly, Robin?
Well, Bope's good at setting up his teams to be defensive and solid, so they do have that to fall back on. But overall, I just can't see this Marseille team really threatening Napoli. I would expect it to be quite a comfortable home win, I would suggest, by at least a couple of goals.
And just quickly on last weekend's action as well from Ligue 1, Robin, because there's plenty to talk about with that second against third place game, Lille against Monaco, and Monaco stumbling, have done well against PSG in their early encounter this year, but Lille proved to be too tough a task for them. What was the reasons for Monaco's defeat on the weekend?
Well, I think quite simply it was Lille's defensive play. At the back this season, Lille have been absolutely outstanding. They've kept, I think it's 10 clean sheets in 12 Ligue 1 matches, which is a remarkable record. And once again, they were really, really solid as a unit against Monaco. Even when their back four was breached, goalkeeper Vincent Wanyama had an absolutely outstanding game. He made two or three world-class saves, including a pivotal block on Radamel Falcao just before, literally 30 seconds before, Lille went up and scored their crucial second goal. So it's really a defensive effort from Lille at the moment. And René Girard setting them up so well. They're a really tough team to break down. And I think if they can continue to be so solid, they'll be up there at the end of the season. And at the moment, they're really looking like the third force in France at present.
And it's fantastic to see after that disastrous year, especially the start to last year, going into that new stadium and falling flat on their faces at the beginning of the season. Now Lille suddenly are starting to achieve that potential that we thought they had going into last season.
Absolutely. They're a very well set up and very well run club. For them to have changed their style so much so quickly, Rudy Garcia had them playing in a very attacking style, and René Girard has almost completely based around their defence. For them to have changed and for them to have made that transition so swiftly and so smoothly is really quite remarkable, and it's really nice to see.
And the big game coming up this weekend, really, Olympique Lyonnais taking on Saint-Étienne. Saint-Étienne, who were a side last year that were led a lot by Pierre Aubameyang, and Lyon, a side that continue to maybe underperform in French football. This is a game of two sides that we expect a lot more than we get from. Is that a fair judgment on this game this coming weekend, Robin?
Yeah, absolutely. Particularly Saint-Étienne, in my view. Lyon have obviously been weakened by a lot of players leaving the club over the last year. Whereas Saint-Étienne, even though they have lost Aubameyang, I would say their squad's perhaps looking even stronger than it did last year, at least in terms of their depth. And in recent weeks, they've struggled to put results together. Even though they might have played well, they're throwing away points. For example, against Paris Saint-Germain a couple of weeks ago, they led 2-0 with half an hour to go and ended up drawing 2-each. That's been very, very typical of their performances lately. And they're just not clinical enough. They need to become more ruthless and really finish matches off in a better fashion.
Do we need these sides to become more ruthless, more clinical, to keep French football almost It's flame going still. It was great, I think, for many people to see Lille taking second place off Monaco and to see them getting in between the big two at the top of the table. Do you get people have started to become, at the beginning of this season especially, a little frustrated by the fact that it is Monaco PSG, and then very little else coming through behind them and so far behind them?
Certainly in the media, the Monaco PSG have absolutely dominated the headlines. On the field, I don't get that impression quite yet. I mean, obviously, financially, there's a lot of jealousy towards these two teams. However, they've not really been dominant for long enough to really, you know, make it a sort of boring dynasty yet. They're not dominant in France like Real Madrid and Barcelona are absolutely dominant in Spain. Although maybe in 3-5 years' time down the line, that will come. At the moment, though, I think there's enough freshness in the league to sustain it for the moment.
Well, let's hope, Robin, that is the case, and let's hope that fixtures like the Derby du Rhône do keep us getting drawn elsewhere into French football. But for the time being, Robin, we bid you a big thank you for joining us here on World Football Daily to take us through a bit of PSG, a bit of Marseille as well before their encounter tonight, and a look ahead to the big game in French football coming up this weekend, Saint-Étienne against Lyon.
Anytime, Ollie.
Thank you so much. Robin Berner from Goal.com joining us here, talking all things French football. Robin, the Graham Hunter of French football, if you will, chatting with us. And a big thanks to both Robin and Graham. It is the Derby du Rhône. It's one of the derbies that's almost a little lost in European football. It's not many people get excited about it, but there is a strong rivalry between Saint-Étienne and Olympique Lyonnais. And just quickly before, we'll probably get into this maybe a little later on in the week, but you look at these two sides, and obviously the record shows how tight this fixture is. Lyon, who very much are considered, I think for the modern day footballing viewer, you know, a much stronger side than Saint-Étienne. Of course, they've impressed in Champions League football in recent years and whatnot. But when you look at the total fixtures played, 104 fixtures played, 39 wins to Saint-Étienne, 35 wins for Lyon, and 30 draws between these two sides. Very close to call indeed. I wonder if there's a derby like this, as big as this, that has just as close an overall stats record as these two clubs do. A big thanks there to Mr. Robin Berner joining us here on World Football Daily, talking a little bit of French football as PSG struggled last night against Anderlecht. Anderlecht really took the game to them actually yesterday. It was a pretty impressive performance. And a big thanks there to Graham Hunter as well. Raf, man. Last night's Champions League football wasn't the most exciting. I felt pretty kind of lucky that I chose to watch Juventus against Real Madrid. Most exciting game of the night, hands down, I'm sure.
Sure.
United drawing against Sociedad 0-0, not great. Obviously, you had Manchester City sweeping past CSKA Moscow, and that was a relatively comfortable result for them. Copenhagen, though, I thought produced a bit of excitement in that Galatasaray game. I was very surprised by that. I watched them on the weekend and didn't think too much of them, to be honest. I wasn't overly impressed by them, even though they did get a 4-0 win against Nordjylland in their Danish league game on the weekend. But I was expecting Galatasaray to get past that comfortably, and all credit, you know, Mancini's men were completely rumbled yesterday in Denmark. It wasn't a great performance from Gala, that's for sure.
I didn't catch much of that game. I feel like, in general, for some reason, Turkish football is kind of on the decline. There's a lot going on both on and off the pitch there all the time, really. And I feel like there's almost getting too much of a distraction around Turkish football off the pitch, which is kind of taken away from what they have on the pitch. Obviously, the talent is all there, and I think they should have kind of dispatched of Copenhagen, even if there was an away game for them. I did catch the Juventus match. I was watching two games at once. Because I basically promised everyone that I was going to watch PSG Anderlecht, and so I was watching Juventus Real Madrid along with PSG Anderlecht. I was a little disappointed. I was so excited for the PSG match, and I feel like it did kind of let me down, just because I had built it up to be like just the perfect opportunity for PSG to just go apeshit, really, I guess. And to be honest, with the Juventus-Real Madrid match, I feel like if I'm Juventus, I'm let down. I'm let down by this draw. I really feel like, you know, we should be competing. We should be beating Real Madrid. And that's the kind of mentality that I think Juventus need.
Well, they were definitely up for it yesterday. You can't say sure, that. You know, sure. The reactions on the sideline, they were pretty pumped up for that game last night. Conte mm-hmm. really had his men working. And to be honest, for the majority of it, I felt Juventus were the better side. As I said to Graham, I actually felt, especially that first 45 minutes,
sure.
Juve were far better. I thought Paul Pogba started the game so well.
Right.
And as I say, as I watched it, I wasn't sure whether it was Madrid getting better or Juve maybe taking their foot off the gas slightly, but an absolutely cracking game. You said you watched the PSG, though, game, Raf. Were you impressed by the kind of the ballsy way that that Anderlecht took that game to PSG? Would have been easy to go to Parc des Princes. You know, they've not been having a good Champions League year this year,
yeah,
Anderlecht.
No,
and it would have been easy for them
exactly
to...
I know where you're going with this, Juice. I got this. I do think that, you know, that was what I was expecting. I was expecting Anderlecht, having been whipped at home, really, you know, to kind of come to Paris and just set up shop and try to, you know, stop the bleeding however they possibly can. And I'm not sure if that's what kind of caught PSG on their heels, but I was impressed by the way that they kind of did come out the gates, just, you know, flying. And credit to them, man. I was seriously expecting them to just straight up fail, really.
was everybody else.
I was practically hoping.
There was an online poll I was reading. 89% of the people that were participated in this poll, which was over 7,000 people participated in it, or around about 7,000, sorry, I should say. 89% of them predicted a home win for PSG last night, 4% predicted a draw, and just 7% predicting a win for Anderlecht. But when Demi Desieu scored a lovely, lovely passing goal as well, mm-hmm. I thought a really nice goal from Anderlecht to open scoring in that game, you weren't really surprised at all. And really, it took the muscling and the quick response of Zlatan to get PSG out of it, because aside from that, you know, PSG had moments of pressure, sure, but I didn't think they did enough to warrant kind of, oh, we deserve to win that game at the final whistle or anything like that. I was really impressed that Anderlecht didn't sit on their laurels, didn't rest and kind of, you know, slump their heads. And they seemed really up for it, and it's disappointing that they haven't played like this more throughout the tournament so far, because obviously it could be a completely different position that they find themselves in had they not been like that. Obviously only 1 point from their first four games now, and obviously not going to be making an impression really on that group, and unlikely to feature in the Europa League once they are out of the Champions League as well. And it's kind of disappointing to see a side put together that sort of performance right at the last minute, when really, if they'd been able to do that in their first three games, could be a completely different story for them so far.
Can I ask you a question? Or actually, this is actually a text. I give out my mobile number to, you know, certain people every now and then. And this is a guy from Palm Springs, actually. I gave it to him because he's from Palm Springs. I grew up there. Anyways, his name's Greg. He said, "Hey, Raf, do you think the Sasha red card was an inspiring one?" I kind of told him, I was like, you know, I guess you can say that they are just all out hustling and definitely kind of playing for it all. But it's hard for me to say that there's ever a red card that
inspiring.
Is inspiring, right? You know what I mean? Like, if anything, I would have liked to have seen the American been a little bit smarter and stay on the pitch and been a little bit more productive for his team. But hey,
it kind of killed Anderlecht's chances of coming away with a better result than a draw, didn't it? Which was disappointing, because as you say, you would have hoped that Sasha would have actually had a slightly cooler head on on his shoulders at that point. And
you should at the end of the group stages, Juice, you should grade Sasha. See whether or not he's kind of improved, gotten, you know, I don't know, any better experience, or if he's learning bad habits or whatever. You know, I just wonder about, you know, if you think about it, Sasha's kind of in a perfect position to be, you know, finding a starting spot in Jurgen's team. I'm not saying that he's deserving of it or anything, but really, you know, he is playing in Europe, playing in Champions League, and competing with the best of the best right now. So I mean, he's kind of checking all the boxes for Jurgen's, you know, selection standards. It's just, yeah, I mean, I just don't know if he's getting all of it as like Landon Donovan would or something. You know what I mean? I don't know. I just, yeah, I wonder about Sasha.
Well, it's hard for me to judge because, to be honest, I've barely noticed him in an Anderlecht side that's been difficult to kind of pick up on throughout this tournament so far. But I'll tell you what, I'll do that for you, Raf. I'll keep my eyes open in the last two games for him and maybe study Anderlecht a little bit more because that group is pretty much done. The Olympiakos Benfica battle is going to be very interesting indeed. But last night, Olympiakos taking a huge win against Benfica. And I said on the going into this game, I was quite impressed with Olympiakos on the weekend. I thought they did well, and they've obviously been smashing the Greek league. And when you compare how they've played in Greece to how they've played against slightly tougher opposition in the Champions League, it has been disappointing. But last night, fantastic result for them against Benfica at home, getting the 1-0 win. It puts them in pole position now to go on and finish off that group strongly and get themselves into the knockout stages for the Champions League. You talk about a sending off that's disappointing. Surely, if you're a United fan, you're going to be looking at Marouane Fellaini's for sending off and just thinking that's stupidity on his part to me. Sure. Both challenges, pretty innocuous, pretty clumsy. And the kind of challenges that if you've got one like he picked up half an hour into the game, you just clumsily swinging a leg around, especially in the 90th minute in a game. Look, you're away at Sociedad. You're away in the Champions League, though. Whether it's Sociedad, the team bottom of your group, or whether it's Leverkusen, you're away in the Champions League in the group stage, and you're getting a point out of it. There's no need to be just kind of throwing a loose leg recklessly and clumsily out to try and catch a player and bring him down. I was really disappointed and really frustrated.
Right. Well, you know what? I was disappointed in another thing. There were a lot of people who kind of right off the bat were coming out and saying, oh, man, that would have never happened under Fergie's watch. You know, like, Marouane Fellaini would never be good doing that kind of thing.
And don't buy that, not at all.
To be quite honest, I mean, isn't this kind of something that you almost expect from Fellaini every now and then in this play? I feel like he's kind of a bit of a
rough and tumble guy.
He doesn't do things... And I'm not saying... He's just a little rough around the edges, maybe even too. You know, like
which worked well at a gritty,
a little awkward. But that's his play. That's his style, and he's a fantastic player. I'm not like discrediting his.
Well, it works.
It
works well at a gritty Everton side like Moyes had. You know, a side that had to battle for every point they got in the Premier League and did very well. And at United, maybe you expect more. I know, but the thing is though. So many United fans said they wanted a player like Fellaini, that grit, that hard drive. So you know what kind of a player he is. You know that he puts in a lot into his challenges, puts in a lot of challenges and sometimes unnecessary ones as well. It doesn't surprise me that he's done this. I wouldn't say it's because it's Ferguson's not in charge or anything like that, although I do think Ferguson would be a little harsher in the dressing room afterwards than Moyes, but that's only from what I imagine David Moyes to be like, as opposed to Sir Alex and the infamous hairdryer. But no, not at all. It's not because Sir Alex Ferguson's there. It's because Fellaini's that kind of a player. He just keeps battling and challenging, and sometimes it's going to cost him, and that was the case yesterday evening. A lot of talk as well, of course, ref surrounding Ashley Young. Another dive... Well, some people have said that he was caught and therefore the hand brushed his shoulder, if you will, and it kind of goes across him and he goes down. Most people slamming him. Graham Poll's come out and said that he was right to award a penalty for that, though, for Bergara's hand on him. Your thoughts on it, Matt? It's Ashley Cole. It's a guy who we know. Ashley Young, even. It's a guy who we know who is renowned for going over easy, for diving in and around the 18-yard box, especially when he cuts inside. To me, it's just another disappointing moment in a guy's career who could have really gone to some major heights but has never done so.
Right. Well, this is kind of, you know, seeing somebody who is very talented, Juice. Like you said, Ashley Young, very talented, very gifted, a ton of pace. And he could be such a better player if this wasn't a part of his game. I feel like there were kind of the odd camera angle that showed a little more contact than maybe a lot of us, you know, want to give credit to. I don't know, but
no, it's not enough to go down. Sorry, you can argue this all you want. You will not be able to change my view.
Yeah, ultimately, Ashley Young, anytime he's in and around the box, he's going to be looking for that foul. I feel like he looks for the foul more than he looks for the pass or the shot or the play around the defender. That's not his first go-to in his repertoire is the dive, and that's just beyond unfortunate, really, for football and his career.
Now, I want to talk about referees again and consistency, because we all know what happened to Chiellini in the Real Madrid-Juventus game 2 weeks ago, when Chiellini put his arm across Ronaldo. Ronaldo drops to the ground, goes crying, grabbing his face. It's obviously not a red card, but the referee comes over and shows the red. Now, last night, there was a point early on in that Juventus-Madrid game where Tevez burst into the penalty area down the left side of the box. He knocks the ball past Varane, and the ball's gone too far. I won't doubt that in any way, shape or form. But Varane then puts his arm across, obviously makes contact with Tevez, round about the neck, shoulder area, the same place where Ronaldo was clipped by the arm of Chiellini. With probably about the same amount of contact, Tevez runs into it and goes down, and Howard Webb says, "No way, mate, no way, get up." Now, aside from the fact that the ball was kicked a little further on, and it was unlikely that Tevez was going to get there, that was the same amount of contact that was made by Chiellini on Ronaldo 2 weeks ago. Is that not frustrating if you're Juventus? I know it's not a big turning point in the game. It was quite early on. And, of course, they were playing very well without needing to resort to such ludicrous tactics as Madrid did 2 weeks ago. But do you not think that you would be a little bit, you'd be looking back at that incident thinking, well, wait a minute, the same thing happened with this minimal amount of contact 2 weeks ago, and the guy gets a straight red. Happens to me, and I'm Carlos Tevez, and suddenly, it's, oh, get up, get on your way. Howard Webb's being, the police authority, get move along, mate, move along. We're not having this, nothing to see here, you know what I mean? No penalty. I would be pretty cheesed off if
something
I was...
Something tells you that Howard Webb doesn't sound like that, but...
I don't think he does either.
I gotcha.
But I would be pretty cheesed off.
Get off there.
Go on, mate. Oh, bloody hell, that bloody guy's gone down in the box. Oh, I'm going to have to give a... In penalty, aren't I? Oh, lads. Yeah, I don't think our website like that at all. Do you think you would be a little bit cheesed off if you're Juve just to see things results
absolutely.
Like that and not going your way?
But here's the thing, Juice. How many times has that happened to you? Seriously, there were times in my Sunday leagues, where you see the same referee a couple times throughout the season. And seriously, one weekend he gives a call one way, and the next weekend the same call, completely flopping the other way, and there's no explanation really. And he doesn't ever talk to you. I'm a very friendly player, by the way, Juice. I like to kind of communicate with
my spit. You're the kind of guy that starts having a go at the referee. I know that for a fact.
No way.
You've told me. I know. That's what you say. No way, ref. No way. No. Get out. You need some bloody glasses, mate, don't you? I bet you put on your English accent when you do it as well.
No, I don't.
Get out of it, bloody hell, sir.
I always call him referee. I say, referee, come on.
I've got chimneys cleaner than that challenge. Bloody hell, that was such a dirty challenge, mate.
I like to try to talk to my referees. I always I try to stay as respectful as possible, but it doesn't you're right in the sense that it doesn't take much for me to think that the referee is out to get me and against me. If I get two calls kind of a foul and then a card pretty quickly, I'm like, god damn it, this referee is racist against Rafael's, I swear. The thing is that I think that's kind of the human part of the game. I'm not sure you're going to be able to figure out a way to bring in technology for this, Juice.
It's just consistency is what we always ask for from referees. It's just consistency. Fantastic game last night. Big thanks to Graham Hunter for taking us through that. He's already taken us through a little bit of AC Milan Barcelona, as if I needed Giancarlo Rinaldi enough telling me that yesterday that AC didn't really have a chance, and I get to hear it all again today. Thanks, Raf, for those bookings, I have to say.
Before we move on to today's stuff,
I need to ask you this question because I don't want to get into the games yet from today.
Okay.
I need to ask you this because this is a serious, very very serious question. Do you think that the Premier League is going to come down to firepower alone? When we see how Negredo and Aguero are starting to hook up together, you see how the SAS are getting on, you worry, everybody's worrying about Arsenal, and if they lose Giroud, or if Giroud goes a little bit quiet for a bit in the season, they're losing that firepower up front. United, Van Persie and Rooney aren't at the same place that Liverpool and City have got their boys at. And similarly, Tottenham, Soldado is not quite doing the business just yet in the Premier League. Do you think it's going to come down to raw firepower? And which do you think is the best tandem? The SAS of Suarez and Sturridge or Negredo and Aguero?
Yeah, I'm loving Aguero alone. I feel like is nearly unstoppable at this point. I think the SAS is pretty strong. But the supporting cast behind them is not nearly that of your City. If City can just put it together, Juice, they're nearly unstoppable. They have firepower beyond firepower to back up firepower with the warm up firepower. You know what I mean? Like that's how deep Manchester City go, and it is to me just a matter of them all getting on the same page, all playing, you know, with that same chemistry. Sometimes they have it, sometimes they don't. I'd like to think that Aguero and Negredo are going to be the ones that that pull it off. I love the way that Aguero kind of flicked it behind his heel. Just the way that the CSKA Moscow player kind of like. The defender knew, like, look, I'm gonna give you that kind of style flick because you're not gonna pull it off. There's just, you know, you don't got that. And sure enough, it happened in front of his face. He got scored on, and you should have seen the CSKA player. He was kind of like, nah, wow, just befuddled that he literally pulled that on him. I think City got what they need. To kind of get it going, in my opinion.
I rated City's performance last night. We do have to remember it was against CSKA in Moscow.
Sure. At home.
And at home. And fair play to Pantelimon as well. Had a good game. I thought the goals that he conceded were actually excellent goals scored by Moscow.
Hey, quick comment about the goalkeeper situation. This is an email from Alex. He says, the subject is Harty. He says, "Dear boys, I'm not sure if you've caught it or not, but in a game or in-game warm-ups for the City CSKA match, Joe Hart was warming up next to Pantelimon before the game, and no words were spoken, no communication, too awkward. I felt it here in the States. Jeez, Alex and Charlotte." Funny thing you say that, Alex, is that I was kind of watching that, like that pre-game stuff on Fox, and it was the most awkward moments you've ever seen caught on camera, Juice. I swear to God, these two keepers were just in their own world, dancing around each other, you know, in the warm-ups, because they're taking turns catching crosses and stuff, and just
I think Pantelimon's probably trying to get his focus in, you know. But B, I mean, that's got to be really awkward when, you know, when the goalkeeper when the keeper coach like says, okay, I want the starter in goal, please, or like number one in goal, please, and all that kind of stuff, and Hart kind of half steps forward and then remembers, so it's like, you know, okay, all goalkeepers that are starting this game, put your hand up, Joe, hand down.
No.
You know that has to be really awkward. It reminds me of when I started, when I took over the reins of being the starting quarterback for my university. But in training, it'd be really awkward because you get to like the scrimmage at the end and you know, your head coach would like say, all right, I want the first team lineups ready and going. And normally, you know, I was used to, you know, waiting for second string and all this kind of thing, going second, get some reps in and stuff. And then you go in first and you just kind of, you know that the other guy is looking and thinking, oh, this is kind of like official, isn't it? Like, he's now number one and I'm number two. And it does, it's not awkward, but it's just kind of, you do, it does kick it in the teeth, I think, right before games, especially for Hart, that he is at the moment playing backup to the man who was his backup. But you know what, he's going to have to deal with that because Pantelimon's come in and done pretty well. It'd be interesting to see when there's a big test for City. who Pellegrini goes with, and also how Pantilimon, if he does go in, does. Because, you know, CSKA Moscow and Norwich, yeah, that's fine. Throw him in against them. But elsewhere, be interesting to see what happens with these two. The Manchester City goalkeeping stories continue to come around. Raf, I mentioned these new boots from Adidas, by the way, this morning. Have you had a chance to check out any of the pictures yet or anything like that? Have you seen... I actually tried to put this one of the pictures up on the World Football Daily Facebook page, and it wasn't allowing me to do it, unfortunately, so I'm going to try it again. But if you if anybody knows me on Facebook or anything like that, they can check it out. I put it up on mine, and I'm going to try and put it up onto the Facebook page of ours again, of World Football Daily, once again. These boots, right, they've been designed with Brazil 2014 in mind. They're the Samba style collection, if so to speak, and they're going to go on sale on the 14th of November. Players are going to be wearing them from the 9th of November, and basically you're going to be able to have these Brazil inspired football boots that are the brightest colored boots that I've ever seen.
I'm looking for these, man. I can't find them. I'm like super jelly at this point.
Go on my Facebook page and have a look, man. There's a picture of all four of them lined up on the Copacabana beach. It's pretty sweet.
So is this kind of like an indoor thing?
No, it's not a brand new boot at all. They've taken the Nitro Charge, the Predators, the F50s, and the 11 Pro. The 11 Pros, and they've basically given them a brand new color scheme for the period building up to the World Cup. Adidas are really trying to push this carnival style thing. I want to know if any of you would actually wear these boots, though. If you'd actually buy and wear these boots, because they are pretty garish. I'm telling you now, the Nitro's in bright green, and the Predators in bright pink with bright green laces. I'm a huge fan of. I think they look fantastic.
Okay. One, the Nitro Charges look practically like the high-vis stuff that Nike have already been putting out. And actually, to be honest, on the far right, I think those are what, Predators, perhaps?
No, the far right's the 11 Pros. Okay. Their comfort boot.
Sure, the 11 Pros. Those are,
The purple with bright pink laces.
Yeah, and the bright green thing, very similar to what Nike got going on with the Hi-Viz. The soft blue kind of look, though.
The F50s.
I dig it, and I'm with you, man. The pink that's pretty damn sexy, if you ask me.
Don't they all look like something out of like Need for Speed or like a video game or, you know, car racing game, those street races like Fast and the Furious? They all look like they've been designed by Fast and the Furious designers. And it's like, yo, man, I'm going to have my bright neon green car with my orange neon underneath and all this stuff. They look like somebody's done that and turned that into a football boot type thing. I like them.
I was going to say that, like, you know, I'm a huge fan of the light blue and orange kind of color scheme that they got going on with those F50s, I think.
We're going to try and get some of these.
If I was a real hardcore Rangers fan, I'd buy those. But I've been really wanting to test out these new Predators, and those pink ones, man, are just, those are incredible. I really, really want to get those on my feet right now.
We're trying to get Adidas to see what they can do about sending some stuff in. I was talking to a rep from theirs today, so we will try and get that and hopefully have some brand new Adidas Samba boots to give away at some point in the next couple of months on this show. But check out, we will get it up on the Facebook page later on today, and check out Adidas as well. November the 14th, you get your hands on these boots. I think they're pretty delicious. We do have Champions League football coming up tonight, of course, Raf. Big games keep on coming. In Europe's big competition, we've got Porto against Zenit, which, you know, it's not a big crowd pleaser. I'm going to watch it because it's the 5 o'clock kickoff. But aside from that, I wouldn't be thinking about Chelsea against Schalke, though. And I've got to say, a big respect to Andy Brassel. I was chatting with him earlier in the week today, and I asked him what he was up to, what European games he was covering. And he said to me, oh, well, I'm doing this voice thing doing a radio thing for UEFA's official kind of radio feed that they do on the website. So he was doing that during the games last night. Tonight, Andy was asked to do Chelsea-Schalke. Now, not many people would turn down the opportunity to go and cover Chelsea-Schalke. But Andy said, I think it might have been for ESPN, but I'm not entirely sure who it was for. But he said, I'm not going to do it. And he said to me in a message that it was because he's so desperate to watch Dortmund against Arsenal. And I was like, that is fantastic. The man has his footballing principles so right. I don't want to go and cover Chelsea Schalke because I'm so desperate to go and see the best game on the market this evening in European football. Yeah, Dortmund Arsenal. I am looking forward to this one. Yeah.
Beyond inspirational, Andy Purcell. Let me just say that when I went and when I sat down with him, I came back kind of feeling like, just as you would say, the dog's bollocks, mate. Just the dog's bollocks. I did. I felt like $100. I felt like I could go and do anything. And his story, the fact that, I mean, this guy, seriously, one of the biggest fans of football in my imagination, I guess. In my mind, and the way that he kind of gets to do what he wants to do and write about and talk about the things that he wants to is just amazing. Like, he was talking about things, you know, he's like, he kept telling me, Raf, just, I mean, I don't know, write about what you like. That's what I do. And I was like, geez, man, the way that he gets to make his dream kind of live out every day is just absolutely incredible. I'm super jealous of Andy, and I'm so glad that he stood up for what he believed in and says, No, I've done the whole Chelsea Champions League business. Don't you worry. I'm going for entertainment more than actual work here.
It is it is the best game in Europe so for this evening. I'm going for Dortmund just on this stat alone. The fact that Oliver Giroud has scored 3 goals in his last 4 Champions League appearances. Great little run of form for Giroud. Mm. Congratulations to him. Robert Lewandowski has 3 goals in 3 Champions League appearances. Dortmund are just that much better, aren't they? You know, oh, Giroud's got 3 and 4. Oh, wicked, great. Oh, I've scored 3 and 3. So, guess I'm slightly better run of form. I'm 1 for 1. You're not quite that, are you? I really do think this is Dortmund's night. Arsenal away from home, it's going to be a big test for them. Unbeaten their last 4 Champions League away games, so 2 wins and 2 draws in those games. And they've scored in each of their last 8 games in Germany in the Champions League. And remember, Arsenal were the closest thing to knocking Bayern Munich out last year in the Champions League. You know, they did come close. Yeah. We didn't think they would, but they did come pretty darn close in the Allianz Arena last season. You wonder if they might be able to rise to the occasion again, but I'm going with Dortmund this evening. I do think they have more than enough in the tank to get the job done at home.
So let's be honest, Juice. Out of all the matches today, what is your match of the day, I guess?
Match of the night is Dortmund-Arsenal, and it's going to be a 3-1 Dortmund win.
Mm.
It's going to be a trumping to me. I do think it's going to be a trumping. I'll go one further. I'll say that Barca are going to win 2-1 in the new camp. I think Ajax are going to get a draw against Celtic in the Amsterdam Arena. Atletico are going to get past Austria Vienna 3-0. Napoli are going to win 3-0 against Marseille at home. Chelsea will get a 1-1 draw with Schalke. Stauer against Basel. I'll go with a Basel 2-0 win. and Porto are going to beat Zenit 1-0 away from home.
Wow. Well, I mean, that's way more entertaining than what we saw kind of the last...
Let's hope so. Last night we struggled.
I mean, you're completely neglecting the major kind of matches that I was talking about. And no, I'm not talking about the Capital One Cup with Sunderland and Southampton. I'm talking about Major League Soccer. The New York Red Bulls are playing host to the Houston Dynamo and the Kansas City Chiefs. I mean, the Kansas City, Sporting Kansas City. I was just joking. play New England Revolution. I was seriously joking. I made that reference because I thought I knew you'd appreciate the Chiefs.
Yeah.
All right.
Sure.
Taking on New England Revolution. How do you see those playing through?
Red Bulls are going to do it. I'd like the Dynamo to come through, but I really do think the Red Bulls are going to do it. But I've got SKC to come back and beat the Revos 2-0 tonight. Go through.
Yeah, I think I have to agree with you completely there, man. I'd really like to think that Houston maybe kind of, pull like a 1-0 or something away. That'd be wicked. I'm not sure.
The thing that will get them through will be the playoff experience. That will be it. The fact they know how to win games at this sort of level.
One thing is for sure. If I turn that game on, I will not turn it off. I will promise you that right here, right now.
Well, I'm wondering if it's going to be a late one here in the UK for myself, I have to say. I wonder if it might be worth staying up for the Major League Soccer this evening.
To be quite honest, man, the game that I'm for sure watching at 11:45 is Rangers Dunfermline Athletic. So... Scottish League One, just match. It's fine.
I'm sure.
Keep Keep it focused. Like Andy Russell, I have my priorities right.
Yeah, you know what for. You go right on that Scottish lower league football. Well. And on that note, we will leave it there for today. A big thanks to our two guests, Robin Berner and Graham Hunter, two expert voices to give us their thoughts on French and Spanish games in the Champions League in midweek this week. A big thank you to Raf, as always. A big thank you to you guys. Remember to keep your thoughts coming in. Show at worldfootballdaily.com, at WFootballDaily on Twitter, 310-909-8483, and the Facebook page as well. Check out these new Adidas boots. Let us know your thoughts. Are they too bright or are they just right? And, of course, your thoughts as well on the Champions League performances from yesterday. Shakhtar getting that good draw against Leverkusen at home. Cerna, by the way, if that dipping strike goes in, I don't care if it was a cross or not, that would have been a wonderful effort had that gone in, striking the inside of the post and almost giving Shakhtar that 1-0 win. Leverkusen didn't look that great. Your thoughts on Hernandez's miss for Manchester United against Sociedad, and of course Didier Drogba blazing one over as well against Copenhagen. Aguero and Negredo better than the SAS? Keep telling us those as well. At WFootballDaily on Twitter, the best place to get your immediate replies into our questions. And of course, PSG. Are they a title shot? My friend, by the way, is going to be going and buying himself a Zlatan Ibrahimovic shirt this weekend. He just is falling in love with Ibra. And he kind of wishes he was like 24 rather than 31. Because then he'd be around for a lot longer, which of course would be nice. We're going to catch up with all the Champions League football on tomorrow's edition of the show and start looking ahead to the Europa League and of course some of the weekend's action as well. But until then, take care. Have a cracking afternoon. And we'll catch you at the same time tomorrow. Have a good one.